Hello, thank you for joining us for what should be a great game.
The fourth official couldn't allow him on because the fourth official never had a cheat.
Well, he overheated up the baby, did he? Unless he's breastfeeding, he should be all right.
Welcome along. It's another edition of the Football Family here on the 42 with me, Gavin Cooney, joined as ever on the podcast by David Snaid. Morning, David.
Good morning. What's the crack?
And Shane Keegan is here as well. How are you, Shane?
Gentlemen, how are we keeping?
Dave, you're... Listeners can't see the background of your Zoom, but there is a Real Madrid jersey hanging proudly in the background. Like, how does it feel to have been such a committed Real Madrid supporter for almost, 72 hours at this point?
Si, senor. Now, as I made the point to you before, I just have a bit of a grah for Real Madrid, just because, purely because it's, I remember being literally in the Bernabeu when my wife took a pregnancy test to find out that she was pregnant with our son. So I remember she'd taken a test previously that morning, so we had an idea, but then she was like, there's no way, I don't remember. And then we were actually in the Bernabeu. Ronaldo had finished doing his warm-up, and she came back up the stairs, and her face was a bit white. Like, kind of, as in, what the fuck is going on here? And literally, we're sat in our seats, and she showed me a pregnancy test. And I was like, all right, yeah. And then, grand, yes. And then sat there watching the match, realising that we were going to be parents.
Bit mad, all right. You having the jersey there kind of reminds me of, there was somebody put up a very good tweet just before the Europa League final saying, this is the biggest game in the entire history of the 3 days I've been supporting Eintracht Frankfurt.
That's the joys of football. But as you can also see, I am full training kit wanker today as well. I'm wearing my initial Beach Park training top because, and I swear down, this is as nervous and as excited. Never mind Real Madrid, Liverpool. Beach Park second versus the local in Division 3A of the United Churches League on Wednesday. I implore any listeners who are in the area of Lucan on Wednesdays to come up to Beach Park Green. We are playing them to effectively win, to decide the league. If they win, they win the league. If we win, they have to win their last game to send it to a playoff. I'm telling you, squeaky bum time. We had a good session up in Beach Park Green last night, pissings around, working on team shape. We were talking there about coaches and all the rest of it. Our gaffer was in his absolute element of no idea what he was trying to say. But can't wait. Absolutely buzzing. Absolutely buzzing.
Give us the kickoff time and the location again.
So 7:15. So anyone who's basically from Lucan, who's listening to this, because I wouldn't expect anyone, diesel and petrol is so expensive now, so I wouldn't expect people to be driving to it. And especially because these lads, and I don't mind saying this and whatever, these lads are a shower. Like, some teams you come up against and you don't mind a bit of verbal and all the rest of it, because that's part of it, but these lads are just...
So if they beat you and then win their last league game, then you play each other again? Is
no,
what you
so,
said about playoff?
No, so if they beat us, they win the league, because... Right. This is our last game. They have two games left. They have two games left against us and against Coolock. So if they beat us, they win the league. And then if it's a draw, then I think they pretty much need to just get another point from the last game to win it. But I just don't want them to win the league on that green. Like, just couldn't bear the title. We beat them up in the Phoenix Park earlier on in the season. And I actually don't mind telling you this as well. So Chris Forrester will be friends with a few of them on the team. Remember, we played them in a Shield game, and we were brutal in the game. They beat us, and I had come off, and the fucker bleeding videoed me from the other side when I was wounded. I was in bits. I was after the match, fucking like literally aching. And he sent the video. He fucking took a video of me from the other side and just sent with a little caption saying, "You're a broken man." So I want to ram those words down his throat as well.
Yeah. Yeah, my little lad, we had a celebratory day in Portlaoise on Sunday, because obviously we had won our cup final and our under-14s in Portlaoise had won the under-14 All-Ireland. So we had a celebratory day. It was a great crowd. It also doubled up as a fundraiser for a sick kid we had in Portlaoise on Sunday. And my young lad walked around all day in Portlaoise in full Real Madrid kit. How nobody kicked the shite out of him, I don't know.
Okay, I mean, we've had the United Churches League, so now another one of the great football competitions is, of course, UEFA Nations League. Here we are on the precipice of another campaign, Ireland's third campaign. Is it the one in which we finally win a game? fucking hope so. David, why does this matter? Tell us, why should we all get excited about the Nations League?
That's summer football, isn't it? That's not the love. Kenny has obviously already stated that he wants to try and win the group. He wants to do well. So it's important for him. It's important for the development of this team. And obviously we're messing and joking here at the start. But like, this is serious for him now at this point. They think about it, these four games are probably going to shape the next little while. Because like, four games in like such a condensed period at the end of a season, it's really important for them in terms of just keeping some of the momentum going, really. Obviously, don't get me wrong, winning a game. But like, there's also at the end of it a playoff place could be at stake depending on who you do, but also get into that other league. And listen, I know we've like sold out games and done well with crowds and all the rest of it, but even for the FAI's point of view, if you're in a higher league and you're coming up against better caliber of opposition and all the rest of it too, that's just going to be an increase in revenue, might even get a sponsor. And yeah, so it's really important on the next 10 days, really, how in terms of 10 days from the first game to the last game. And I'm just really, really intrigued to find out where you're staying to make sure you're actually in the city where the match is being played.
I've asked other journalists where they're staying, and then I booked where they told me they were staying, so I can't mess this one up.
Unless they're aware of your track record and have decided to have a bit of a skit at your expense and have given you false information, Gav.
Baku's in Armenia, isn't it?
But for the 2 years, like, how are you genuinely feeling about these games? In terms of, is it hard to get up? Not to get up from as if we're playing, but like it doesn't, like at the moment, it still feels as if it's slow build up. But they are important. Like, it's really important considering some of the stuff Kenny's already come out with and talking about what he wants to achieve. Like,
I think they're great. It almost feels like it's going to almost feel like a club side for a couple of weeks, isn't it? Like four games in a short period of time. I think it's absolutely brilliant. I'd love to see more kind of windows like that outside of major tournaments where you get a real blast of 3 to 4 games. I'd say the team and him are in his element. Even to hear 27 out of 27 trained yesterday. I mean, how unusual is that? Like, and I would think that the players are absolutely delighted to be in there. I would say the staff are delighted to have them and have their hands on them for so long and get some real, real proper work done. And yeah, I absolutely can't wait for the game. So I can't wait to see what Stephen can do with having the group together for a prolonged period of time, back to back games, how he's going to manage the chopping and changing and all of that kind of thing. So no, I'm well signed up to the Nations League this time around, I'll tell you.
I'm in the full grip of anxiety about Dublin Airport in the morning. Once, I mean, if I get there, I'll be happy. But I will have. I was just looking before we start recording about what time I should get to the airport, and I'm gonna have to forgo a lot of sleep to get out there. But I'm really looking forward to it. They are important games. I know the Nations League has got a lot of stick from very high profile figures. I think Kevin De Bruyne was slagging it off last week. Jurgen Klopp has called it the most senseless competition on the planet.
Kevin De Bruyne can come back when he wins the Champions League, that fella, right? It's all right being part of a sports watching project that blitzes a league, but come back when you actually start winning stuff that you know you really want to win, Pat.
But it's really good for the nations of like Ireland standing.
I just think, do you want to have a fight with my 7-year-old? He'll take you down.
Oh, you would, absolutely. I am an absolute windbag. As the lads from the local will find out again on Wednesday.
Sad to see two Real Madrid fans reduced to squabbling with each other already. No, but they're really good. And obviously there's the very significant impact. The fact that this, as we have been told, is that the Nations League will decide seeding for the Euro Championship draw. And look, there's just games that aren't friendly games to fill a year that otherwise wouldn't have any qualifiers. I think, wasn't it the case, there was... Oh, what year was it? I think there was, when O'Neill and Keane first took over, they went a year or something without having any proper game. It was just friendly games. So like that is just so energy sapping and uninteresting. So it's good to have these competitive games. Now, as has been flagged on this podcast for many months at this point, Michael Obafemi has taken his rightful place in the squad, Shane, along with CJ Hamilton and Festi Ebosele. I mean, if you're going to draw the Venn diagram of those three players, I think the word pace is the intersection of them all.
It certainly is, yeah. And look, it is. It's exciting. It'll be interesting to see are all three on the pitch at any one time, because that would definitely be the fastest Irish team I would imagine of all time. But no, they're exciting players to have in and around the in and around the setup. I thought it was really interesting because I would 100% agree with Stephen that Obafemi seems to be becoming a far more rounded player. He said something, I don't know the exact quotes, Gav, you might, but he said something along the lines of, I've seen him do things recently that I hadn't seen previously. And look, I'm not going to claim to have seen loads of it, but I would regularly enough log on to Y Scout and just throw him in, and you can put in goals, assists, crosses, clever passes, you know, all this kind of stuff, and bring up a decent highlights reel. Or maybe it was just my ignorance of it. Maybe he, I don't know. Well, obviously not if Stephen feels it as well, but I would definitely have seen things in his performances over the second half of this season that I wouldn't have thought were part of his repertoire, really. So he, in particular, for me, I'm really, really interested to see, one, how much game time does he get, and two, how does he do with those minutes?
Mm. David, you wrote a great piece about CJ Hamilton when he first declared for Ireland, so you're in a position to tell us a little bit more about the man.
I spoke to Graham Coughlin about him. So Graham Coughlin would have been his manager when he was at Mansfield in League Two. Obviously, it's a few years ago now, and he just kind of made the point that even from then, Hamilton came to him and said he wants to play for his country, which is Ireland. Obviously, he obviously would have been born. I think he was born in Waterford and raised. I mean, he first number of years in his life there. Put just little things Coughlin didn't realise he was Irish. And then you just start speaking Irish to him, start chatting to him about Gaelic and stuff. But it was more so what Shane said there and what's already been said about him. What Coughlin was talking about is he's a lad then. They tried to put it out about him that he qualified for Ireland. But obviously at that point as well, League Two, yeah, that's fair enough. But you're not going to be taking too much notice. But it's clear that the FAI didn't really even still were aware of him, even though those feelers had been put out even back then, because it was only, remember Stephen Kenny talking about it, when he said it was Hamilton came back to them again to say, listen, I'm Irish, I want to play for Ireland. That was only a few months ago. But he's just blistering pace. Coughlin was laughing. He was like, yeah, he goes, I'm getting me juices going here myself, talking about the thought of Hamilton on one side, Ogbeni on the other side, and someone in the middle kind of knitting it all together kind of thing. You just said it could be really effective and a good way of playing against teams where you do have to hit them on the break. That could just be a serious option to have. So don't know if that would be a case of away in Armenia. I'll be honest, I don't know what to expect from them. Will they be sitting a bit deeper and then wanting to soak up a bit of pressure themselves, or will they want to try and be on the front foot? But it just gives Ireland another option. Remember, I think Kenny said at the start of this, that, or before this campaign, before that, saying just it's not going to be one for too much experiment, and that things were beginning to get settled. But then you see Ebiseli coming in, you see Hamilton coming in, obviously Obafemi's coming in now as well. It's a fresh injection in there as well of new bodies and personalities, and it just gives you something else to kind of maybe consider a little bit and see how they can knit together. But with Hamilton, again, I'll be honest, I've seen a couple of little clips of him just only after it became clear he was eligible and then called up. Still haven't seen him play 90 minutes. You're obviously trusting the lads you have and who have actually seen him play. But from speaking to people like Coughlin, who knows him and his character, just the fact that, it's like what Kenny said, he feels as someone who can, when he's given different challenges, in if be it, say, training or demands that are put on him, he plays and he can play in different positions, he can do different things, he kind of rises to it, and hopefully he continues to do it.
Shane, are you surprised to see Hamilton in particular called in? This is the first window he's been eligible for. He's not a guy that's been on the radar for a long time. Are you surprised to see him in first time? And do you think that those who have been in regularly in squads who've missed out as a result have a right to feel aggrieved about it?
Yeah, I definitely was surprised. I'll be honest, I had to go hit Google pretty much straight away. I would have known little to nothing of him. He wouldn't really have come across my radar at all, Gav. And I'd say there are players within the group who are kind of scratching their head, wondering just how he's managed to leapfrog a lot of them. But look, the lads, you know, they're not just going to pull somebody out of thin air. They obviously have seen something about him, and they obviously feel, again, as David's kind of hinting, they obviously feel he's a player that's going to fit into the system or fit into the way that they're trying to play. So look, again, it's another reason to be excited about it. You know, get a look at him for a first time, see what he can do and see what he's all about. But yeah, there's two or three fellas there now that I'd say are not exactly overly delighted to see him skip the queue a bit.
Do you want to name names there?
I don't know. Like, any of the ones who've been kind of in and around it. I know there's, it's hard to trout names of people who've missed out, because with some of them, you know, there are injury concerns and there maybe is fatigue at the end of a season and stuff like that. But I don't know who's most unlucky to have missed out, in your opinion. They're not really jumping to my mind straight off, you know.
Mm. Yeah, you'd just be going through the squad list from previous. Like, Conor Ronan is injured. Yeah. Jamie McGrath has barely played. Exactly, so you can understand that. I don't know. Danny Mandrea is on standby, but I don't know. Can you really? I mean, he went to the June camp a year ago, didn't play. And then maybe Mark Sykes, but Sykes didn't play in the last window. So I'm struggling. I mean, obviously, the Irish football... well, the journalists anyway usually get head up about someone excluded, but it is hard when you saw Hamilton's name in there. I didn't immediately leap to, oh, this person has been left out unfairly.
That's exactly my point. Yeah.
That McGrath move to Wigan really didn't work out, or hasn't worked out so far.
Like, McGrath and Hamilton, I'd say, obviously, it seems as if they are completely different players and style and all the rest of it. But like, McGrath's obviously just suffering because of that move, just hasn't worked out. It's been an absolute disaster for him so far in terms of game time, whether or not he comes in for pre-season at Wigan and can, I don't know, get force his way in for the championship is another matter. It seems it could be difficult considering he wasn't even pretty much in consideration at League One. But then when you think about it, like, it's a big decision from Kenny, or it kind of sets it out for Kenny that if you're not playing. And even though, like, McGrath came in relatively late and obviously only made his debut against Portugal, but he's been nothing but impressive in those games and pretty much done exactly what's been required in terms of tactically as much as that, and in terms of understanding what could be asked in certain games and taking on that information. So he could feel a bit aggrieved saying, yeah, well, listen, the move didn't work out, but it's not as if he's just been in brutal form. Like, he's already shown what he's capable of for Ireland. Don't think a manager, I don't know what Shane thinks, because obviously it's a juggling act, and even at international level it's a juggling act when a player isn't playing. But if a fella has already come in and has done really well and then it's just bombing straight out at the first bit of a sticky period at his club, it's a bit tough for him, I think, you know.
Yeah, you do, obviously, as supporters and that, you know, there's often a clamour for, you know, such and such a fella needs to be called up and all that kind of thing. And rarely do people then turn around and say, well, you know, who should be left out, or, you know, he should be in instead of this fella. We just want this fella in and that fella in and that fella in. Like, for a manager who's trying to build kind of squad continuity and, you know, build relationships with people, you know, having a fella in a squad 1 minute and not in it the next minute and then back in it the next minute, I mean, that's pointless. You do, if there's a 50-50 call, you're obviously going to, well, the vast majority of the time, you're going to side with the fella who's been there before, because you do need that kind of form of continuity to a certain extent. But yeah, Stephen is certainly highlighting the need for players to have minutes. That's
yeah,
sure.
Traditionally, I'm certainly talking from my point of view here, but when Mick McCarthy or Martin O'Neill would say players have to be playing games, you always felt it was just a rhythm thing for them. But do you know, Ziag Bene said something interesting in the last window. He basically said that if you're not playing minutes, you're going to get injured on international duty, because this Ireland team run more, especially in, you know, the attacking areas of the pitch. And the game, like, international football has moved on, even, you saw it at the Euros, like, it has moved on from 3, 4, 5 years ago, where the game is more influenced by the pressing game you see at the club game, where now it's not just a case of, oh, you should be playing regular minutes. You kind of have to be, or else you'll go onto the pitch and you get injured, and then you'll weaken the squad and take yourself out of
action. That's actually on Hamilton. That was something that was said. It sticks me in mind from Coughlin. He said that as well, that he's very good at that. He's very good at pressing from the front, and Shane will know this, and I'm genuinely not being cheeky when I say this, but understanding the trigger moments to do it. I don't know how that works. Do coaches work on that, or is that just supposed to be an instinct thing for players, where they know the moments? But it was something that Coughlin said, that like, he would pick it up better, and might not have used this in the piece, he could pick it up better than other players at that level around them, and the certain moments, and understand what was asked of them quicker than other lads. And that one of the things was that, like, you tell them something once and you get it, which is something that, from a coach's point of view, he said it made his life easier because he didn't have to worry about them then.
Ah, yeah, well, look, we've spoken before about, you know, players and having a football IQ and what it means to have a football IQ. So they obviously rate him in that sense, that he is able to take information on board reasonably quickly. But I mean, just going back to the overall point on the minutes, like, you know, if you are Jamie McGrath, you might be inclined to be kind of looking at it and saying, well, hold on now, Jeff Hendrick here, is there one rule for one and one rule for another? Now, there's absolutely no doubt that Jeff Hendrick has made himself completely integral to the Ireland setup, but he hasn't too many minutes lately, I'd say, has he?
Well, the other obvious example is Shane Duffy, who hasn't played at all since the Ireland-Belgium game was on the 26th of March. So that's, you know, that'll be nearly 2.5 months by the time the Armenia game kicks off. So he did come in. The Ireland squad came in last Saturday morning. The players who were playing in the Premier League and the Championship playoffs were given an extra day, and then Kelleher came in on Monday morning. He brought Duffy in a day early on the Saturday so he could play that 60-minute friendly game with the Irish under-21s on Sunday, just to get some rhythm in. And he was one of two players who played the full 60 minutes. Everyone else just played one of the 30-minute halves. But, it, I mean, Duffy will start. I mean, I'd guess that there is no doubt about that.
It could be an element maybe where he has certain positions where he's like, wait, these lads, no matter what, they're my bedrock, that's my cornerstone. Unless they're injured, they're the fellas who I definitely want, I definitely need. It could be an element of that. But then, like, this is just something that we can listen. I think it's fair to flag it now and talk about it now and make the point now. But at the end of the window, if Ireland have had a good window, well, then that talk dissipates a little bit. Do you know what I mean? If things have worked, it's just the nature of it. Like, it's the whole point of the job and all. You kind of, you're there, you scrutinise things a little bit. You wonder, you ask your questions and say, well, what's this, what's that? But, like, at the end of it, if the results come, like what's happened in the last little while, where a lot of the pressure and the fact that he has a new contract, that's come because he's gotten results and because of the positivity. And like this, if Ireland play well and the tactics that are used work with the players that are utilised, well, then it's like, well, do you know what, Jamie, you just have to start playing football and then you might get back in and have a chance. Like, that's just the nature of it, really. It's fairly simple, isn't it?
Shane, how big a loss is Matt Doherty?
Yeah, look, I'm not, he's been decent for Ireland. I still don't think he's reached what he can do in an Ireland jersey. Like, you look at when he finally kind of did get a good run of form for Spurs. I mean, he was absolutely excellent for a period of about 6 to 8 games. They're better probably than I've ever seen him in an Ireland jersey. But he's a big loss. He's absolutely a big loss. It'll be interesting. I think we've had a bit of a conversation around it before, haven't we? It'll be interesting to see what way he juggles it, because it used to be, obviously, it was an automatic that we would say, well, if Matt Doherty is not right wing back, well, then it's going to be Seamus Coleman. More increasingly, you find it hard to see Seamus Coleman as a right wing back now. I know you mentioned, I think Mandro was on standby, and obviously I've kind of pushed for Jack Byrne. I actually thought Andy Lyons might have half a chance. You know, he's been that good this season. He really, really has. But I suppose you look at the 21s and the important games they have coming up, maybe it makes more sense anyway for him to be left alone and left there, and probably has a bit more to do maybe than before he forces himself in there. But yeah, it's going to be interesting to see what we do in that position, Gav. It is going to be interesting to see what we do in that position. If you stick out your neck now, I mean, who's your starting right wing back? Is it Cyrus Christie?
I was going to say, you'd expect them maybe to definitely get minutes. That's obviously why he's being drafted back in. Like,
I thought initially that Festi Abasele was in there, but he's listed as a forward. Ask Kenny about it. He sees him as a forward. He did admit that one of the reasons maybe he got the nod, just from the way he was talking, Abasele seems to have just made it in. Great achievement already, but at his age, in fairness. But he did make it in by the skin of his teeth into the 27-man squad, and the fact that he could be repurposed as a right wing back seems to have been one of the reasons that he's been included. But Kenny has said that he sees him more as a forward. So maybe Coleman can play there. Cyrus Christie will probably be the first choice there. Maybe Abasele. I'm struggling to think of any other options for that.
If they're really stuck, now Kenny's already said Ogbeni has played there. I think even Hamilton, I think, has played there at one point in a couple of points. But that's
only... I would imagine, look, you know, these games are important, absolutely, and it is important to get the results, but they're also games for building and moving in the right direction. And do you really want to stick a fella into a position for one off or, you know, two off, a couple of games, who you don't actually see playing in a position long term? You know, I don't think Stephen will be interested in plugging any gaps for a game or two. Yep, he's fast become. Probably would you go as far as say first name on the team sheet? I think he's not far off. He's been excellent. He's been absolutely excellent. Read some reviews on his domestic form as well. And seems to have had an outstanding season. I think he might have made one of their whatever it is, team of the years or all star selections or something like that out where he is as well. So no, look, he's nailed on. And it will be interesting to see how we cope with his loss, which is, you know, a real, real testament to him that we're talking. You know, that's not something that far, that long ago. He was still fighting to try and become a regular in the team. Now we're concerned about how the team deals with not having him around. Who goes in there? I assume who goes in there beside Hendrick? Will it be Horan? I don't know. I'd be leaning towards one of the two younger lads. Knight, can he play that deep? Maybe not. Maybe Malumbi. I'd like to see Malumbi in there, possibly beside Hendrick.
Yeah, look, I actually saw Knight make his debut for Derby County a couple of years ago, and he did play deeper. He kind of did play as one of a two, actually against West Brom. Darragh O'Shea was on the bench, that day, and like now listen, I think it was the first game of the season, or it was early on in the season, but I don't know, like he did the well, but I think Knight's kind of worked better for Ireland where he's been a bit more advanced and maybe has a and. But I think Malumbi is the one who's already been in there, and speaking to people at West Brom, he's had a pretty decent end to the season in terms of a bit more consistency. But the thing that comes back when you speak to the people there is just that little bit of calmness. Like he has all the rest of it, but in that position as well, just that would be needed, that in possession of the ball, you know. But he's dependent on how he's trained and stuff, but I think he could be the one, because he also has that, I think he has the same, I don't know if this makes sense, like him and Knight seem to have a bit more, do have the energy, but I think Malumbi just seems to be a bit more explosive than Knight, and just seems to maybe have that little bit of an element where he could actually take the ball by fellas as well from the midfield. So I wouldn't be surprised if Malumbi is the one who gets the nod, which would be interesting as well. We're talking there about not just filling gaps or fellas coming in and out. He's been kind of, even though he's been in and around in the squad for the last while, he hasn't played for a good while for Ireland. He's been kind of out of the picture, apparently because of that, the form of Cullen and Hendrick together. So could be interesting to see if
and we haven't mentioned Adam Brown at all there. Would Adam Brown stand a chance in that deeper role?
Again, I think he's not better getting into the box, isn't he? He's one of those getting into the box. Like, that's where some like the best moments he's had, the goal against Serbia, the goal just the equaliser. Who did we play last time?
Against Belgium.
Yeah, Belgium. Oh yeah, because De Bruyne didn't turn up that game, didn't you know? Wasn't worthy of his time. But I think he was too, were you getting rested for the latter stages of the Champions League there?
You and John Giles. It's you and John Giles. You're the only two players in the world who don't rate Kevin.
No, you rate him. Oh, hold on. You can rate someone and still think they're a sap. Do you know what I mean? Like, don't get me wrong, like Kevin De Bruyne is an absolutely unbelievable footballer. He's the best footballer in England. But what you call it? So what was the point? No, but sorry, with Brown, yeah, I don't know. Again, he's just I could be totally wrong here, but for Ireland, he's never struck me as a fella who you'd want as one of those two, maybe not so much dictating, but being the ones who are in possession. Cause I just don't think he's as maybe good in the ball. He's better, I think, getting onto stuff or being the one breaking. Or I could be wrong on that. I don't know what you think, Shane. You probably have a better, well, not probably you do, would have a greater understanding of his strengths and what he brings, but.
I think you're fairly on the ball there. I would be interested to see, will there be any little slight experimentation with the shape, in that I would like to see us go, rather than, so say you've got your back five with obviously your wing backs pushing on, so obviously we have tended to go then with 2 8s or 2 6s, whatever you want to call it, then 2 10s in front of that, and then an out and out centre forward. I would like to see us go with 3 and 2, if that makes sense. So one sitting midfielder, 2 box-to-box midfielders, and an out and out front two. So in a situation like that, you could potentially, I think Hendrick would have to play as the deepest because Cullen's not there. Could you go with, you know, Hendrick with Knight off one shoulder and Brown or Malumbi off the other shoulder, and Igbene playing right up top with Robinson as a front two? It's not a huge tweak to what we're doing. It's not a huge tweak anyway.
Not a bit of a worry that we'll get sliced through in midfield if they change it to that. I mean, that was the problem. I mean, Kenny, when Kenny first got the job, it was 4-3-3 with, you know, sounds like a midfielder, like you describe it there with one holder and midfielder, and they're just sliced through repeatedly to the point where he had to change it.
Yeah, you'd be hoping you wouldn't be getting sliced through repeatedly by Armenia, though, really. You know, you should be able to roll the dice and be a little bit more attacking in a game like that. But again, it all comes down to what Stephen's priorities are. You know, is he looking at, you know, trying to develop a little bit of tactical flexibility, or is he trying to absolutely nail down the shape that he believes best suits the team? And that's up to him to decide.
One word, is Bizzunu starting in goals for this, David?
Yeah.
Shane?
Yep, despite Mark Travers' training performance the other day.
Very impressive, wasn't it?
Wasn't it a great little run of saves, wasn't it, in fairness to him?
Go to the FEI's Twitter account, listener, and you'll find it there. Shane, you've been scouting Armenia for us. Tell us all about them.
Felt like I was back in the Europa League with Dundalk, Gav, going from knowing absolutely nothing about a team to trying to become educated on them. I was thinking, of course, I went into it thinking, right, Mkhitaryan, I know him. Who else have they got? Yeah, Mkhitaryan retired in March, so I now know no Armenian players. So I really, well, really want
to. I have to say, you've advanced my knowledge of Armenia there.
So yeah, look, I had a look. You look back, I suppose you go back to 2020, the fact that the Under Nations League group was reasonably impressive. That's why they are where they are coming into this one. North Macedonia, Georgia, and Estonia, like, you know, that would be a group that they would have been probably not favourites maybe to win going into it. So they've done quite well there.
We've seen North Macedonia beat Italy in a World Cup playoff. We don't need any to be told anything more about Georgia. I mean, so.
Yeah, no, I think it's impressive going to win that group. And then they look like they're on a serious roll, because they came out of the back of that and went into their 2022 qualifiers and won the first three. They beat Liechtenstein, Iceland and Romania, and had 9 points from nine at the start. And then Mkhitaryan had missed those three games and came back from injury from those three games and came back into the side, and the arse fell out of the whole thing. Actually, he was left out when he came back at first. And he did you see his tweet? No.
No.
Oh, yeah, he put up a tweet saying, like, management have left me out. I have no idea why, you know, they've given me shit reasons as to why I've been left out, kind of a thing. Came out quite noisy about it. But then, unfortunately for him, when they did bring him back, that early form just completely fell off a cliff. I think the remaining seven qualifiers was, it's either three draws and four defeats, or four draws and three defeats, something like that. And what looked like they might actually be in line for qualifying for a World Cup just petered out completely and utterly. And a lot of fingers were pointed in Mkhitaryan's direction as the common denominator from how things went well to not going so well. So he has, yeah, he's packed it in. He's decided that he's had enough. So we're basically starting from scratch, really. What I have learned is, yeah, shape-wise, it's pretty much a standard enough 4-2-3-1, I think. Strengths and weaknesses-wise, by the way, like, no point me claiming otherwise here, a serious, serious hat tip to Kieran, what does he go by? The Irish Kieran. Have you ever been on his Twitter account? It's quite good. Quite good. He has done, that's where to go, lads. That's where to go. I've done a small bit myself, and then I stumbled across this as I was going along. And then, yeah, I'm plagiarising him from there then, really, to be honest with you. Not completely, to be fair. I had about an hour's work done before I found him. Unfortunately, that would have saved me the hour.
You're saying is, Kieran, if you're listening to this, if you send your invoice to sport at the 42.ie.
Absolutely, 100%. Look, on the plus side, most of the stuff I had managed to figure out was then backed up by what Kieran was saying in his piece. But yeah, look, they seem to be a hell of a lot better going forward than they are going backwards, Gav. They're three best players.
That might suit
three
us.
Best players.
Yeah. They're not great against teams who sit in deep. It sounds like Armenia might not do that.
Yeah, well, no, they'll still sit in deep. They will. Defensively, they'll sit in deep and they'll try and defend with numbers, because their actual defensive line can be got at. So their only way to try and solve that is to try and get plenty of numbers back and deep and not leave players isolated. I also think their goalkeeper, watch out for that. I think we don't be surprised to see a bit of a clamour or an error from him. I've watched some of the goals they've conceded. He hasn't covered himself in glory. But no, I think they will defend in a low block. They definitely will defend in a low block. But on turnovers, I think that's where they'll really look to exploit it. So they've got, the way they try and attack, Gav, is they really just attack with four players, to be honest with you. The back four won't, the fullbacks won't really be bombing on. I don't think the back four will stay in place, and then they'll play with two sitters in front of that. But the line of three behind the centre forward, that they're their three best players. They're their three top players. So they are. So they'll look to be creative, particularly on counter attacks and or times when they do have the ball. They kind of all operate off a, I'm trying to think of a comparison, a Carsten Janker style centre forward.
What a show.
So it's, put it this way, he's without a doubt, he's their starting centre forward. He's their main man at centre forward, very much their go-to guy. And yet he has, I think, he's only two goals in, I don't know, 30 games or something like that. But I get, it seems to me that the other three love him because he does all the hard yards and he acts as the battering ram and he kind of pushes the centre-backs back to create room for those. But no, the three, again, I'm going to absolutely butcher the pronunciations, but Bayramian will probably play off the left-hand side, Barzigyan off the right-hand side, and Spartian in the 10 in between them. And they would be their three real kind of top-quality players that'll be trying to do a bit of damage to us, I think, yeah.
Carsten Janker's Wikipedia is not very flattering at all. Under style of play, he's described as a powerful and tenacious, yet slow striker.
what's lanky in Armenian?
he's currently the manager of FC Marchfield Donaun. Sorry, I'm butchering that pronunciation. I'm sorry to our German listeners. They themselves don't have a Wikipedia page, so I'm not sure exactly at what level that they are. He was previously the coach of SV Horn, but he was fired.
Carson, there, the Armenian coach actually seems to be an interesting enough fella. He's had quite a lot of seasons in La Liga. He's been kind of everywhere in La Liga, really, to be honest with you. He's managed Villarreal, Sevilla, Deportivo La Coruña, Atletico Bilbao, Mallorca, Levante, Granada, Osasuna. It's a serious collection of clubs that he's managed to get himself through. Most recently, was back at Sevilla. He managed Sevilla from 2000 to 2005, and then he arrived back there in 2018. And had two stints as caretaker manager and a stint as director of football there during 2018 and 2020. So yeah, he's a serious list of La Liga clubs anyway, that's for sure.
Joaquin Caparros, he's like an Iberian Big Sam. Well, thanks Shane, and specifically to you at the Irish Kieran for your scouting report of Armenia. Okay, so Stephen Kenny a year ago said that the ambition is to top this group. In one word, will Ireland top this group, David?
Possibly.
That is one word.
I can't argue with that. Shame?
No.
Okay. The Irish under 21s had a very good shot at qualifying for a European Championship for the first time ever. The 2023 Euros are in Georgia and Romania. Ireland have a chance of both making a playoff and possibly automatic qualification. They have a triple header of their own at home to Bosnia on Friday, followed by Montenegro on Monday, and then Italy away on Tuesday the 14th of June. That game may be a shootout for a top spot. David, you've been kind of in and around the 21s camp for the last couple of days. What's the mood in the camp is always the question that's asked here, but I always think it's a really shit question, but I couldn't think of anything else.
Who was up yesterday? So Brian Maher was up yesterday. It was funny, kind of getting a bit of slagging off Andy Lyons when he came in, which I thought was good. Piece up today with Conor Coventry, and then piece coming tomorrow with Gavin Kilkenny. You seem kind of quite confident, to be honest, and just, I don't know, ready for the games. Like, obviously Conor Coventry can become the most capped player on the 21 level this week. Guess who he can overtake?
Go on.
Graham Barrett.
Is it?
Graham Barrett has the most at the moment, 24, I think it is. So Coventry's on 23 at the moment. And considering he only made his debut in 2019, it's not bad going as well. And obviously the Toulon tournament kind of does a few games in there. But Coventry's an interesting one. Like, I'm looking forward to hopefully going over to see him. His granddad and Nana are both from Dublin, both from town. His granddad's from Ringsend, his Nana's from the Liberties. And obviously from East London, there was a few bits of chat about Mark Noble and stuff and the impact and the kind of example he set. But, like, the be-all and end-all, it's really interesting, the be-all and end-all for Coventry is playing for Ireland. Like, he kind of stressed it again, like, and everyone knows in terms of young lads from play for West Ham who have a kind of a bit of a, who are from maybe London, that part of London, and who've played for Ireland. But like, I think he's the real deal in that regard, in terms of being Irish. I think he's one of them, like a Gary Breen, who sees himself as Irish with an English accent more than anything else. But yeah, just listening to them, like obviously they've had a, like after the Montenegro game, and they got beaten by them, and the disappointment of say Italy, but the last two games against Sweden have just kind of given them a new lease of life a little bit, or kind of reinvigorated the feeling about the place. They kind of both of them, Kilkenny kind of mentioned it, and it's not giving too much away, even though the piece is going tomorrow. Just talking about the character of the players that, like you mentioned there at the very start, Shane, about how this is feeling like, say, a club team now with the seniors, how there's so many games. But like these lads all together seem to have that kind of feeling as well, that they're all lads who kind of have moulded that feeling amongst themselves and that sense, because like I think the three of them came down together and all, and like sometimes you've seen at 21's level where it's like you feel as if lads are there and they don't really have that buy-in, or they might be there just because people above or people in the FAO just want them in and around it, and hope that basically capping lads for the sake of it to try and get them into the system and all the rest of it. Doesn't have the feeling, I don't think, at the moment with this Ireland team. Even the lads who obviously do qualify through the grandparent rule, yeah. There genuinely does seem to be a proper sense of togetherness about them. Not just going off what you call it, speaking to the lads yesterday, but even just chatting to say Jim Crawford about it, and you were over with the FAO with him for the pod last week as well, and even just speaking to a couple of people at the FAO, like it's a good group of lads, it seems, which for some of them hasn't always been the case with some of those lads in that squad.
Can I just say, David, if you were ever on Mastermind, your specialist topic absolutely has to be the parents of Irish players or League of Ireland players, because there is no man in this country who knows so much about soccer players' parents as you.
And I was actually getting slagons for this yesterday. So a couple of colleagues there saying that kind of, yeah, what do I have for middle-aged women, actually, no, don't use that bit, sorry. I've been getting a bit of slagging out there. And listen, Shane, you know yourself, you know, when you're a freelancer, you have to kind of find different angles. My angles just always seem to be the same.
who was the piece with that went up there the last day or two?
Killian Phillips, was it?
Oh, Killian Phillips.
You'll be happy to hear you've come up on numerous occasions when I like to highlight kind of good pieces that are less sport and more just general interest in people's lives to my wife, Roisin, at times. And I says to Roisin, David's got a really good piece here with Killian Phillips. And she says, what mode of transport this time?
It was the dirt. Bunked on as well. Bunked on, didn't pay. It was literally about 7 inspectors at the turnstiles at Connolly. And Killian goes, just get in behind me here, quick, mommy, just get in behind this fella, and just go through. And then he paid for the two child tickets for us on the way back, rather than paying the extra 40 cents or whatever it was.
Don't know who this reflects more poorly on, you or him.
Well, I'm still gonna expense it, that's the thing.
I think that might be your trouble now.
Maybe I just don't use that, but he's a good lad. But sorry on that, but that point that you make, this is the thing, like part of the reason we do it, like you find out more about fellas and you get an idea. Like I don't know if Killian Phillips, I hope he does now after speaking to him and hearing more about him. I hope he goes on and has a great career and stuff. It's just that's why the whole point of the piece was like it's if he had a good season at Drogheda, this is now the start of his journey in football over there and stuff, and hopefully it takes him. It's almost as if you could say that dark could have been a metaphor.
I absolutely love them. I love them because my whole thing, I'd have a massive fascination with how people become the people they are, if that makes sense. You know, particularly kind of elite performers or things like that. How did they turn out to be the person that they are? So sure, who's going to give you better insight than that than the parents? I think there's a book in, you know, you write down, you know, 10, you know, international stars across sports, and you don't talk to them, you just talk to their parents, something like, you know, how I became who I am sort of a thing. I love it. Mm. I love it. I think they're brilliant.
Did the Irish Karen give you much insight into the parents of the Armenian players?
Nah, he's not the same level as David at all.
We'll move on to a bit of League of Ireland chat. I mean, so Dundalk are now second in the league. They beat Pats 1-0, and now coupled with Derry's 2-2 draw with Harps means they're a point ahead of Derry. Rovers, what, 8 points clear of the league, at the top of the league now, 9 clear of Derry, though Dundalk do have a game in hand. So since Derry beat Pats 4-0 and they were subject to huge praise on this podcast, the Irish has completely fallen out of their season. 3 draws and 3 defeats, 9 points behind Rovers, down to third. What has happened to them, Shane?
I think the stuffing has been knocked out of them by those back-to-back games. Who did they play the week before Rovers, David? Whoever it was, the week before Rovers, and then the Rovers game. Pats, wasn't it? Yeah, Pats. They were home to Pats, and they absolutely annihilated Pats, and somehow Pats managed to get a draw out of it. And then they came down to Talla and were fantastic against Shamrock Rovers and came away with no points from it. So they've had two huge games against, you know, two big rivals, and put in two excellent performances, and they've 1 point to show. Like that, you know, that has to knock the stuffing out of you. That has to, you know, really, really great. And, you know, I think that might just have had a bit of a hangover from that. I do. I think they've had a bit of a hangover from that. And, yeah, the form has dropped. Look, as much and all as I was praising Derry, and I think rightly so, because they have been excellent, patching Dunnigan, you know, McGonagall, they've had some boys, they've had some of the best performers so far this season. I mean, I've made absolutely no secret whatsoever from the start of the season that I thought Shamrock Rovers would win this league and win this league quite comfortably. And that's why, because at some stage Derry were gonna have that kind of a blip. And to me, a blip for Shamrock Rovers will be one-game blips. I can't see them ever having any much more than a one-game blip. I mean, you look at the previous result where Rovers had been, were they back the previous week they were, I think, weren't
they? Yeah, being Drogheda.
And you're thinking, oh, you know, could there be a bit of a shake here? And, you know, bang, it's just back to normality again straight away.
I wonder a couple of bits on that. Like, so you're saying about the stuff and knocked out, and that's probably what can kind of happen to a new team when you get shook a little bit, and you don't know how lads around each other will cope or who's going to step up and all the rest of it. Whereas a team like Rovers, who are a bit more settled, when they do have that bit of a kick in the teeth, they just regroup quickly because they know, right, settle back in, this is what we do, blah blah blah, and it's not going to be a big thing. That's probably something to expect maybe with a team still like Derry, and maybe it's making excuses, but when you are bringing new lads in, they're still finding out about themselves as a team and how they operate and how they work, especially when you have that. That could still come with Dundalk. I know I made that point and I was being a bit cheeky about it last week, saying I thought that they still looked solid. And part of the reason I thought that was just because they were conceding so few goals. And that one of the things O'Donnell already had got in seemed to have instilled, even though they weren't scoring loads, was they seemed to have them very hard to break down, which is a very good starting point. Like some of the games I've seen with Derry, there were still times where they still looked a bit vulnerable. But because of the talent they had, they were able to come through that. With Rovers now, I'd say, yeah, like I can't, like 9 points clear. Although I think Dundalk have a game in hand, don't they? And we're giving shout, I think there was a great stat, wasn't it, from James Rogers, that Stephen O'Donnell has more points at this stage of a season in his fourth season than Stephen Kenny had when he was at Dundalk. I think it's 1 point more. So looking forward to Stephen O'Donnell taking over the Ireland job soon. That'd be quite good. But with Rovers, the only thing that could hamper them, I suppose, is if they do really well in Europe. Because that could then really test their squad, then stretch their squad. Like if they do have a run and maybe possibly get into the group stages of the Conference League, you know, that could then.
But that squad is so deep, though, David. Jeez, they should be well capable of bouncing between almost a European side and a league side. Like for me, you know, you could. I honestly think you could. Take away definitely the bottom half of the table. I really do think Shamrock Rovers' second choice 11 would beat pretty much most of the teams in the bottom half of the table.
No, there's no doubt. I just kind of think the only thing that's in my head with it. Sorry, the only thing that's in my head about that is, if Europe does begin to come on the radar a little bit and all the travelling that could be involved and the games, you never know where to go. Like, it's the only thing that I can see now that would properly test that squad. And if it was just a normal season, and yet, I don't mean this in the nicest possible way, and it was like the usual kind of thing where you might have a couple of games in Europe and then you go out and you're back to the league, I don't think there'd be any stress, like if they had a bit of a blip. But if there is the potential now because of with the Conference League to play more games, and that kind of maybe takes on a greater importance, which I think it's almost an element that it could and it should, in a way, that if they do really well, because it's what you want to see from a League of Ireland team, especially a team like Rovers, who how they play and the coaching staff that are there and what they're trying to do is you do want to see them do well in that Conference League. And when you see how it's kind of kicked off already after 1 year, and it's been, I think it's been a great success. We're not necessarily about the Nations League and all the rest of it, and me being an idiot talking about Kevin De Bruyne and all the rest of it, but those lads are on a different level, do you know what I mean? Like, internationally in terms of football with senior club level and internationally, but like below that, stuff like the Nations League and then stuff like the Conference League is brilliant, like, and it should be something that should be utilised as much as possible, and it'd be fantastic to see an Ireland team do well in, obviously, say the Nations League, but then obviously in the Conference League. And Rowers at the moment are the ones who seem best set to do that, and you'd hope that would be the one thing I would say that could maybe not see them romp away with it. I still think because of the gap they already have, they'd be grand, like, but it's the one thing I could see maybe seeing a lead get eaten away a little bit, especially because Dundalk don't have European football, do they not? I don't think, do they? Yeah, so that could be the one thing that helps Dundalk as well. I don't know.
Do you know what'll be an interesting conversation in a lot of dressing rooms at the moment, Gav? Is there's always a lot of chat around this time of the year about the break. And the lads will want to know, you know, how long are they been given off, and, you know, are they expected to report back on the Friday or the Saturday or the Sunday or the Monday? It varies between those 4 days, and they'll talk to players in the different clubs, because this is their only chance to get away. So it's a huge thing for them, how long are they been given off and all of that kind of stuff. And, you know, the managers will have come to agreements with the players around all that. And now we find out that all bar one of the fixtures coming out the other side of the break are all off. So how is that going to affect any agreements around when they're back? And, you know, will some players push for extra days off? You know, as a manager, do you just bring them back and just train away for 2 weeks leading into a game now? Or do you give them a few extra days? So it's just an extra little thing for managers to try and negotiate now, you know.
This day next week, are we going to have odds on who's gone AWOL? Who's odds on for AWOL?
Listen, lads, it's absolutely crazy. I am telling you now, you go to any one of the primary resorts around Europe over the next 2 weeks and you will just bump into the who's who of the League of Ireland. It's madness. It's madness. Because you think about it, you multiply whatever it is, 20 teams by panels of 20, you have 400 lads after or more gone all over Europe now for the next while. I remember going out one, and managers, obviously, we were in the same boat. So I remember going, where did we go? I can't remember, one of the usuals anyway, Portugal or Spain or something like that. And sat down into my seat, it was myself, Connor was only very, very young, myself, Roisin, Connor, sat down into my seat. Snead, help me here. Clark, a very flexible player, would be up front, right back 1 week, up front the next. Came through UCD, went to Pats. What's Clark's first name? No, it'll come back to me in a while. Nice fella, actually. Very nice fella. I think he's a gym instructor. Sure they all
did, did you open with how flexible he was? Or was that?
Well, he literally sat down in the seat beside me. Like, you're trying to get away from the League of Ireland, and here you are straight away, a League of Ireland player sitting beside you on your plane.
Dave can catch a Ryanair flight with someone to Torremolinas for his next piece.
Obviously, the age of social media and all the rest of it, I've seen a couple of broken men leaving Ibiza over the last couple of days as well.
In the First Division, Cork are a point clear at the top. They won the top of the table clash with Galway United 1-0 on Friday night. On Galway, it has been announced that Alex Murphy is leaving to join Newcastle United. There's a bit of hype about him. Do we know much about him, Shane?
The hype being all coming from Johnny Ward, I think, is it? No, he is. He's very, very good. He is very, very good. Look, they've been talking about him over there for quite a long time now. So they have big, powerful boy. He seems to be able to use the ball. Like, you know, you always have to be so, so wary of talking young fellas up when they're going across the water. He is still a young fella, although, you know, granted, he's a couple of years older going across now than he would have been a few back before Brexit, which I think will stand to him. But look, he looks excellent, Gavin. He really, really does. He looks excellent. I mean,
what position does he play? Like, what kind of?
Well, that's I think, to be honest with you, his ideal position would be, let's take Stephen Kenny's current setup. His ideal position is on the left of the three centre halves, because he's half a left back, half a left sided centre half. So he is, but you know, such a powerful runner with the ball, but yet while running powerfully is running with his head up and assessing his options in front of him. When he's coming through the middle with the ball, he's able to pick out a pass. When he's coming up the wing with the ball, he's able to deliver a cross. So he's a super bit of stuff. Like I've yet really to see any kind of player get the better of him. I would love to have seen him in League of Ireland Premier Division this year, because he's too much in his comfort zone in League of Ireland, particularly the way John sets up as well. There's a lot of bodies around him, you know, they don't exactly flood bodies forward, so he's never really exposed to a, you know, a top quality player trying to take him on in a 1v1. I'm yet to see that, so I can't say whether he's able to handle that sort of a situation or not, but he's exciting. He's very, very exciting, and you know, if the current trajectory continues, he's a guy that we could be hearing a hell of a lot about. But as well, we know, you know, those trajectories tend not to be as straightforward as his has been to date.
And someone at Galway finally getting to work for the Saudis, you know.
I was literally going to say what you were saying there, but you could go far. So this is a future post, I believe, for Saudi Arabia, is it?
Pals, we're going to leave it there. Thanks very much to everyone for tuning in. Thanks to David. Thanks to Shane. We're going to be back next week with a review of the game in Armenia and a look ahead to the game against Ukraine in Dublin. Also, lots of under-21s chat there as well. So do get in touch. Gavin Cooney at the42.ie. Tweet at GCooney93 or join the WhatsApp group. The details of how to do that are in the episode description of this podcast. Until next week, catch you then. Watch the butcher shine his knife, and this town is full of battered wives. Round and round, up and down, through the streets of your town. Every day I make my way through the streets of your town. Ride your river under the bridge, and I take your boat out to the reach, 'cause I love that engine roar.